You're listening to the Real Enneagram Podcast, a spiritual quest brought to you by the Institute for Conscious Being.
Welcome back to a podcast entitled The Real Enneagram,
a spiritual quest.
Thank you for joining us today. We have a great podcast planned with myself, Erica Jobes, and with me I have the great Dr. Joseph Howell. How are you, Dr. Howell?
Oh, I'm great, Erica. Nice to be with you again.
Yes, it's been a little bit. So, yeah. I'm real excited about...
You've had a lot of excitement in your house.
I have. It's been good, though. I can't really complain. But I have missed our time together on these podcasts, so because I always get so much out of it.
Right. Well, so the listening audience might need to know what you've been preoccupied with.
Well, so my wife had a baby, and the baby is going to be 12 weeks old this week. So we're moving into the third month, and so starting to get back some semblance of routine and sleep and that sort of thing. So feel like we're just, you know, sometimes you feel like you're just kind of treading water, and so we've been treading water for 3 months trying to keep this precious little guy alive and happy and well, and so he's doing great, though. He's great.
And Charlie is a blessing to many people.
Yes, he is. And it's so fun, you know, you always talk about how when you look into the eyes of a newborn, how you can really see their essence. And, you know, they're straight from heaven. And so that's been fun for me this time around. I have two older sons. And when they were born, you know, I didn't have this information or understanding. So this time around, it's been really kind of fun to experience his essence with him and to kind of enjoy that, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you can see just the pure light coming from their eyes. Mm-hmm. Can you hear? I'm sure you see that in Charlie's eyes.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, when they lock eyes with you, the absolute unconditional love is just wonderful, you know, and amazing, all wrapped up in one, you know, watching him grow, watching all the little, you know, neurons connecting and figuring things out, and you know, wondering what it's like to be him, to feel completely loved and completely held and not to have any woundings quite yet, and, you know, to just to feel like everything revolves around him, you know?
Well, we're glad to have you back, and we know that from time to time, your new parental duties, besides having teenagers, are going to pull you away, but the listening audience and I appreciate your being the host of this wonderful podcast that is being heard around the world.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's amazing to me, Joe, the number of people that tune in on a weekly basis from all across the country and all across the world. And we are so, I know you and I both are so honored that so many people tune in every week to listen to us and to listen to the things that we're talking about and the teachings. And I know we've had a lot of listeners who are very interested lately in spiritual practice. And one of the things that I've noticed as we travel around, Joe, and we talk to so many different people, is that a lot of Western religion doesn't have a great grasp on spiritual practice.
Right.
You know, we often will sit and pray and give the divine a list of things we'd like the divine to do in, you know, in a kind of like we walk up to the judge in a courtroom and, you know, we approach the bench and give them a list of things. And, you know, while that is important, prayer like that is important and necessary at times, it's not the only way to experience God. It's not the only way to grow in awareness and consciousness. And there's so many great different spiritual practices. And I think sometimes when we feel flat or we feel plateaued or we feel like, you know, God isn't present in our lives, or we feel just a basic sense of being disconnected, or a sense of disenchantment, or a sense of disillusionment, it's maybe time to look at our spiritual practice and change it up a bit, you know, or learn a little bit more to deepen the things that we do to connect to our deeper selves and to the divine. So I was hoping today that you could talk to us a little bit about the spiritual practice of meditation.
Yes, I'd be glad to. What would you want to begin with regarding this?
Well, you know, I think for a lot of people that I've talked to, and for myself, in the, you know, probably about, gosh, 10 years ago, meditation seemed like something that you sit on a pillow in lotus position, kind of with a monk's robe on, and you have to do it just right, you know, and that's not true. There are lots of different types of meditations, and you don't have to sit on a pillow in lotus position. So, you know, I guess what I would like to hear from you today is bringing meditation to a place where people can wrap their arms around it and understand it and have some benefit from it in their own spiritual practice.
Yes. Well, of course, this subject can go on, and we might need to have another podcast about it. But to begin with, the physiological realm of meditation is being shown to be a very wonderful healer for the body. You know, for years now, we've known that it lowers the blood pressure. And for years, we've known that it gave people a sense of being calm and peaceful. But now they have done research at Clark University to understand that the chemical of the brain is being altered in the meditative state, and that cortisol, for example, is, the production of it is lowered and running through the brain, which is, you probably know, it's a hormone having to do with anxiety.
Right.
It's a byproduct of anxiety, and it has the propensity to, the more cortisol that we have, the more anxious we become, and then the more cortisol is deposited. It's sort of the way the brain reacts to that, which is fight or flight or going to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then serotonin and epinephrine are also altered in terms of their uptake and their bathing of the brain. And these are the hormones that allow us to have happy and peaceful feelings.
Mm-hmm.
They have distilled several other hormonal activities that are going on in the brain other than the ones that I've mentioned. So come to find out, what the yogis told us from ancient times until now happens to be the truth physiologically and scientifically about the peacefulness that we are able to receive during meditation and the lack of chemicals that would increase anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So that in and of itself is a scientific substantiation for this wonderful altered state that we get in. And I say altered state because once we go into meditation, the cares of the world are really gone after the initial entry phase. Because, of course, during the beginnings of meditation, just like everything, we're wondering if we turned off the stove or
yeah,
where we, you know, are going to have to get groceries this afternoon or whatever. And after that comes the mental state of kind of what we call no thought. it's just a kind of a blank screen upon which we are looking. And the thoughts that then come out of that peacefulness are thoughts that a well-known meditator described it to me as, they are like you're looking at a river and the thoughts you have do not clutter you but pass by you, mm-hmm. like boats on that river.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my beginning, the physiological. Being a nurse practitioner, do you have any thoughts or
I do.
Yeah.
You know, you talked about the hormone cortisol. It's a stress hormone, and basically it's a steroid. And we know scientifically that when we're in a place of stress or anxiety, mm-hmm. that, you know, our body is flooded with cortisol. And what that does is it weakens our arteries. So we're more prone to, you know, heart attack, stroke, you know, lung issues. It halts our digestive process. So, you know, those times where we feel like we've just got a brick in our stomachs, it reduces our energy level. It increases our heart rate. So our bodies are just kind of, it's like having an engine that's just revved up all the time. Over time, that's going to wear down the engine of the car and it's going to break down. And it decreases our libido. It reduces our ability to have a good, peaceful sleep. It reduces our bone mass. It causes us to hold on to fat, adipose tissue. So that state of stress is really bad for our bodies. And we know that meditation is a way to kind of break that vicious cycle you were talking about, where you're anxious and you reduce cortisol, and then, you know, of course, your engine is revved up, which makes you more anxious. And so you just have this, you know, conscious vicious cycle of release of cortisol. And meditation is a way to kind of put a pause on that. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you care to talk about serotonin?
Right.
Or
I mean, and the same thing, you know, epinephrine, DHEA, the hormones that build our bodies really do the opposite of everything just spoke of. And I know I go in and I see patients who are having elevated heart rates or having irregular heart rhythms. And I go through this teaching of, you know, meditation and calming our minds. And it is phenomenal how many times that, as, you know, I have a patient of mine go through a meditation with me that will see their heart rate slow. You can watch it on the monitor. It's right there at the bedside. You know, we can see it comes all over the person as they begin to let go. And what's fascinating to me is nothing's changed. The circumstances haven't changed. The patient's still laying in a hospital bed, and their bills have either been paid or not paid. And they either have a good relationship with their children or they don't. Or, you know what I mean? Their careers are going great or they're not. Nothing's changed in the outer circumstance, but what has changed is the state of mind. And it has a physiological, immediate physiological response to the change in our state of mind. So we talk about meditation. We're not talking about changing our circumstances. We're talking about changing our response or our way of being in this world.
That has a lot to do with the Enneagram.
Yeah.
Because how can we make the trip back to soul if we are abuzz with all our concerns that take us out of the realm of spirit and put us squarely into the realm of anxiety, turmoil, and all the negative things that the world, living in the world and living in the ego, can preoccupy us with?
Absolutely. I mean, we think about stress really in a lot of ways as being overly fixated with our ego and really being caught in the traps of our ego. Right? I mean, that's where the Enneagram comes in and puts vocabulary around why meditation is important and why getting out of our mental chatter and the clutter of the mind is so important.
Mm-hmm. So just a few for our listeners who aren't familiar with meditation as a way to have as a spiritual practice for their trip to their soul from their ego. To meditate, you probably, if you've not done it before, need to just do it for 10 minutes a day.
Mm-hmm.
Because your brain has got to work up to being in non-thought for as much as, you know, 40 minutes, 45, or however long that we want to meditate. And before we sit for a meditation, we need to know that the phone isn't going to interrupt us, so it's got to be turned off. We need to know that we have a quiet place where we won't be interrupted. And for many people, that means getting up earlier in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
To have that time. I remember when we had small children, that was the only time that I could get to meditate was, you know, getting up earlier than they got up.
Yeah.
In order to have that quiet time.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to be a peaceful surrounding if possible. One person I spoke to said, well, I don't have a peaceful room in my house. It's all a mess. And I said, well, do you have one comfortable chair and a candle? I can do that, they said. And after that, they began to meditate. And their whole life changed. And it began with cleaning up that little office that the comfortable chair was in.
Mm-hmm.
Order came into the meditation room, and then order came into her room by room, into her whole home, because of the peaceful nature that she began to feel in her life. And she had been a very, very busy banker. In fact, she was vice president of a very well-known bank, very large bank. And she ended up giving that job up in order to go into a contemplative lifestyle, and later became a priest. And so that one candle and that one chair gave her the place to begin what was already in her soul to come out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing. And I love the idea too, you know, of you, when you begin meditation, beginning small. You don't have to do it for an hour. 10 minutes is enough. You know, you think about couch to 5K for people who want to run. You don't just jump up off the couch and run a 5K. You have to begin with walking and then intermittently jogging, and then you jog a little further, and then you walk a little less, and before you know it, you're jogging a 5K. I think the same is with our mind. That's why they call it a spiritual practice, because you have to practice. You have to get into the practice of finding that chair and lighting that candle and turning off the phone and, you know, finding the right time of day for yourself. I mean, you know, often when you begin a spiritual practice, by the time you've done it a year, it looks nothing like the way it looked when you began. You've modified it and tweaked it to the point that it works for you.
Absolutely. And I know you do it daily, and it does change the day.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Can you talk about that?
Well, yeah. I mean, being an ego type 8, you know, my ego is very concerned with control and autonomy. I don't want anybody to tell me what to do. I want to do my own thing. I want to have control. And the reality is, the truth is, the holy truth is that I never had control. And meditation allows me to release that grip that I have on life, where I'm white-knuckled gripping around things, trying to control them and have things go my way. It allows me just to release into the divine flow, which, you know, when you say that, the first time you say it and the first time you try to live into it, it can feel a little scary, because what's God going to make me do? Am I going to end up as a missionary in Africa, or... You know what I mean? Am I going to have to, like, sell my home and all my belongings and live as a pauper in the streets? And you know? But the truth is that that's not the divine, falling into the divine flow. God loves us. This universe is working for our good. And when we release the grip that we have and fall into the flow, oh my gosh, it's so much better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so much more peaceful. You feel such a sense of wholeness and just general love. And so for me, starting the day out like that is just a good reset. It's a reminder of how I want the day to go. And then in times of stress, in times of loss or tragedy or those kinds of things, I have to do it more than once a day.
Yes. And it works, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I can feel when I begin my meditation, and you know, when I begin my meditation, it's about setting that intention to set that time aside.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about being the best meditator in the world, because I know that is not ever going to be the case. I'm never going to like get the Olympic gold medal of meditation. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to win anything or accomplish anything. I'm just trying to release into the divine flow and release my thoughts for that time period. And I can feel it. I can feel a physiological difference at the end of my meditation from where I started.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that prompts me to think of how really what a good way to actually begin the meditation is. And sometimes lighting a candle is a good thing, but you know, you can meditate on a bus if you really want to.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I first learned about meditation, I was in my early 20s, and I was in graduate school and on a shuttle bus because the campus was spread out. And I remember thinking to myself, what am I going to do while I'm on this bus and have to be shuttled all the way down to the other end of campus to the library? What am I going to do during this, you know, half hour while I'm in transit? And I thought, I never have to worry about being bored again.
Yeah.
Because all I have to do is shut my eyes and go to the third eye.
Mm-hmm.
And I am immediately transported into another energizing and beautiful realm that is already within me. And you know what? Even in line at the grocery store, when it would be much easier to pick up a National Enquirer to read while I'm waiting, meditation can be done while we stand.
Mm-hmm.
If we know some of the principles that, of course, we will have discussed and will continue to discuss, it can calm you even in the waking state. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Mm-hmm.
And to also say that after your prayer, as you brought up your intention, it is really good to do again what the ancients did, and still many of the Buddhists and Hindu and Eastern religions still do, and that is chant or say the one word Om.
Mm-hmm.
Some people spell it A-U-M, others spell it O-M, but that one word has been known to set us into the vibration beyond ourselves, into the vibration really of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a certain tonal quality. It has a certain vibration. I mentioned the third eye, and that is the place in between our eyebrows.
Mm-hmm.
And the chant Om vibrates our brow, and specifically in the middle of our brow, which is, as the Hindus put it, that eye opens us to more intuition and greater perception than we would ever have in our ego state.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, right behind that is the frontal lobe of our brain, right behind our brow. And that's where a lot of decisions are made and a lot of concepts are understood and processed. And then in the midbrain is the pineal gland, which we are coming to understand has a lot of control of our emotional and peace states. And so the frontal lobe being at the front will send vibrations to the other lobes, the parietal and the occipital, all the way to the back of the brain, where is the medulla and the brainstem. And we have our command central ready, on notice, vibrating to a different vibration than what our ego would vibrate our brain to. Mm-hmm. What are your comments about that?
Well, you know, I think as we, you know, we talk about vibrations, we know that the world around us is vibrating. You know, scientists are measuring that now. They measure it in hertz, and they measure, you know, the vibration of trees. They measure the vibration of the planet. You know, our hearts put out a frequency that is in tune with the frequency that's put out by the planet. And I think when we're in that stressful state, we're putting out, you know, and the engine is revved up, we're out of tune, we're out of sync. And that meditation takes us back and it puts us into a vibration that we were created to be in. And it's a vibration that is in tune and in sync with our planet and with our surroundings and with the divine. And when we are in that vibration, that is when there's healing and wholeness. And that is when, and the only time, we can have real clarity about purpose, about what we're supposed to be doing, about, it's the only time that we can really experience divine love. And not just the verb of loving others, but to experience the love that the divine and this universe has for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it, like you say, it aligns us. What does the word use? Like coherence.
Yes.
That the vibrations of our body are in sync with each other, and then with the major vibrations that this earth is sending out. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's fascinating, really.
It is. To be in alignment, mm-hmm. to be in divine order.
Right.
And next time I'd like for us to talk about what happens during meditation, because mm-hmm. that is a whole subject of its own. But this has been a good gateway
yes.
into the topic. And just to say again, for our listeners who may be saying, what does this have to do with personality types? Mm-hmm. It has everything to do with personality types, because by knowing our personality type, we know our soul type. And by knowing our soul type, we are able to enter the Enneagram of soul, which is completely different from the Enneagram of personality. It is the ability to gain from all 9 points the different facets of the divine which are already in us. So meditation, if it helps us to get rid of our ego preoccupations, and meditation, if it helps us vibrate to the vibration of our soul, then it is very, very integral to the Enneagram.
Yes, very powerful. And it's a practical way. It's something that we can wrap our arms around and understand, and it's something that we can put into practice. So it takes us out of this theory, and it takes us out of, you know, this realm of just thinking about the Enneagram, and it puts us into a practical way of practicing, you know, the journey from ego to soul.
Right.
So, Well, thank you so much, Dr. Howell, for going through this with us today. And the next time we get together, we'll go more in depth about meditation and the actual practice of it.
Terrific. I've enjoyed being with you, Erica, and with the audience out there all across this world. We have people in Finland who have just communicated with us, and there's an extensive group of Finlanders who are associated with the Enneagram and Enneagram studies, so I'd like to make a salute to them on this podcast and tell them thank you for coming.
Yes, thank you for listening. We so appreciate your support. And for our listeners, anybody who has any questions or comments, please contact us at therealenneagram@gmail.com. You can also find us on the web at theicb.org, and that is spelled theicb.org. And you can get more information about our trainings, our upcoming conferences, and more information about just the Institute for Conscious Being in general.
All right.
Okay.
Very good.
Thank you for listening today.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That wraps up another episode of The Real Enneagram, brought to you by the Institute for Conscious Being. If you're interested in furthering these conversations, please reach out to us through our Instagram at The Real Enneagram. Or if you're interested in our upcoming trainings or other resources, please visit our website, www.instituteforconsciousbeing.org. Thanks for listening.